John chapter 3, we read, "And this is the condemnation, that the light has come into the world, and men loved darkness rather than light, because their deeds were evil. For everyone practicing evil hates the light, and does not come to the light, lest his deeds should be exposed." We're told that the world is at odds with Christianity. It hates the light, doesn't want its deeds exposed. And in other places we see that it is out, when Jesus says, "If you're not for me, you're against me," in other places we see it is actively out there seeking to destroy Christianity. It will forever be at odds because it hates the light. And that, with that comes an attack on Christianity from every aspect, right down to the very foundation of Christianity. Society today attacks whether or not God even exists. In Exodus chapter 3, in verse 14, it says, "And God said to Moses, 'I am who I am.' And he said, 'Thus you shall say to the children of Israel, I am has sent me to you.'" God is. As much of what we find in the Bible, on the surface, very simple, very clear, very direct, very easy to understand. At the same time, as you delve into it and look into it, you can find how profound that is as well. God is. It's so easy. The world would complicate things. They like to, society portrays belief in God as this great complication that if you need it, you can add it to your life, but it doesn't really do anything. It's just blind devotion to nothingness is how society portrays it. In fact, they say it's illogical to believe in God. Why would that be the case? So why do you believe in God? Because God is. It's simple. I reference it almost every time I stand up here. In Romans, Paul says, we can know there is a God. His invisible attributes have been clearly seen since the creation of the world. There's a creation, so there's a creator. The proof of God is simple. It's not convoluted. It's not what society would have you believe. They like to add terms, make it sound like a bunch of mumbo jumbo. Oh, do you believe in the metaphysical realm? And they add all this stuff. Well, sure. What's so illogical about that? You know, a computer, it's nothing but a logic box. In the history of computer programming, they have progressed every time. They've progressed meta level to meta level. It started with machine language. You programmed in ones and zeros to get the logic box to do what you wanted it to do. Then they went to a higher level language, assembly language, and made assemblers which will convert and create that machine code. They went to what they called higher level languages. Now they're working on programs that will create code based on a design input. But everything that creates, every time there's a new program that creates more code, it always depends on a meta level of code. There's always that higher level. That's the study of computer science. So here's an existence here. What does logic say? There's a meta level that leads us to it. Society wants to complicate it and say that's a bunch of mumbo jumbo, and that's something that if you believe in, well, more power to you, but it doesn't really change anything. But it's simple. It's logical. Belief in God, as much of the stuff in the Bible, is that way. If you throw out all the preconceived notions, if you go to basic logic and look at the world around you, that's the only conclusion you can reach. In Matthew chapter 13, Jesus says everything is out there, plain for people to see. Speaking of why he speaks in parables. In verse 10, it says, "And the disciples came to him, 'Why do you speak to them in parables?' And he answered and said to them, 'Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. For whoever has, to him more will be given, and he will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see, and hearing they do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, Hearing you will hear, and shall not understand, and seeing you will see, and not perceive.'" This isn't saying that parables were there to confuse people. It's not what that's, he's not, I speak to them in parables so that they can hear but not understand. No, he speaks to them in parables so they can hear. This prophet, when he says so the prophecy can be fulfilled, he's saying they must hear so that they cannot understand. Parables are there to make things plain, to make things simple. He puts it in terms of their everyday life. Belief in God, the things he says, is simple and easy. We read the story in John chapter 9 of the blind man who was blind from birth, who Jesus healed. And I really like the passage that follows when the Pharisees question this man. I might have even stood up here and spoke on it before. I don't know. If you've heard me talk about it, I'm sorry, but I like it so much I'm going to do it again. The Pharisees sit here and struggle against something very basic, that Jesus is God. It's the same struggle the world tries to make when they try to complicate things and say there is no God. And you can see the Pharisees do a lot of the same thing. I actually get, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but I get a sense of pleasure from watching the Pharisees struggle and fail miserably and all the different ways they struggle and fail. So let's look in John chapter 9 and let's look at all the things the Pharisees try to do here as they struggle against the simple facts that Jesus is God. And keep it in context and see how the world struggles against the simple fact that there is a God. Starting in verse 13, it says, they brought him who formerly was blind to the Pharisees. Now it was the Sabbath when Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. Then the Pharisees also asked him again how he had received his sight. And he said to them, he put clay on my eyes, and I wash, and I see. Right here is the first problem for the Pharisees. Because there's nothing hard in what the blind man says. There's nothing convoluted. There's nothing they can twist. It's all simple and easy. I put clay on my eyes, I washed, and I see. When we start with the basic facts, we get to the very basic conclusion. But the Pharisees, they don't like that. They start in verse 16, it says, therefore, some of the Pharisees said, this man is not from God, because he does not keep the Sabbath. Others said, how can a man who is a sinner do such signs? And there was a division among them. They said to the blind man again, what do you say about him, because he opened your eyes? He said, he is a prophet. So when they say, because this man opened your eyes, what can you say about him? Simple answer, he is from God. This man, put clay on my eyes, I wash and I see. He is from God. But the Pharisees are in a great division among it. They don't want to accept that basic, simple fact. And it's not the only time we see them resisting stuff in front of them. I know we mentioned in class today, how could they miss it? I offer you one way, maybe not the only way, but one way which the Pharisees did, and quite frankly, I think a lot of society does. They base their truth based on whether or not they want it to be true. If this is what agrees with me, then that must be true. And if it doesn't agree with me, then that's not true. Look in Luke chapter 20. And starting in verse 3, it says, but he answered and said to them, I also will ask you one thing, and answer me. The baptism of John, was it from heaven or from men? And they reasoned among themselves, saying, if we say from heaven, he will say, why then did you not believe him? But if we say from men, all the people will stone us, for they are persuaded that John was a prophet. So they answered that they did not know where it was from. Look at what they are using to determine the answer, to determine truth. They're basing truth on the result that it would give to them, how it would impact them, whether or not they want it to be true. It's not, well, John did signs, John spoke of the prophet. They're not debating facts. They're debating whether or not which way they want the answer to be. And that's the way that they're going to take as truth. And that's their problem here. They don't want Jesus to be from God, like the blind man is saying. So they debate it, they fight it, they struggle against it. But it's simple, it's plain, it's clear that he is from God. As they continue on, we see other means to try to get around this obvious fact. In verse 18, it says, but the Jews did not believe concerning him, that he had been blind and received his sight, until they called the parents of him who had received his sight, And they asked them, saying, Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then does he now see? His parents answered them and said, We know that this is our son, and that he was born blind. But by what means he now sees, we do not know. Or who opened his eyes, we do not know. He is of age. Ask him. He will speak for himself. So their next step is to try to deny the facts. Oh, this man wasn't really blind. Maybe that's the part. Maybe we can get around the facts this way. Let's get his parents in here. Nope. Nope. Yep, he was the guy who was born blind. We know that. Notice the parents stick to the plain and simple facts. Look, this is our son. He was blind. Now he can see. We don't know who did it or how. The blind man says, I know who did it or how. Everyone's sticking to the simple facts, the simple things that are plain and evident. And it's clearly making a case for God, that Jesus is God. And the Pharisees can't tolerate it. Continuing on, it says, But his parents said these things because they feared the Jews. For the Jews had agreed already that if anyone confessed that he was Christ, he would be put out of the synagogue. Therefore, his parents said, He is of age. Ask him. Now we're at the next step. The Pharisees are just making preconceived notion. You know what? He is not the Christ. Anybody who says that, no, you're done. That we're just going to arbitrarily declare this. Despite all the evidence that's pointing contrary, we're just going to start with this notion, and that's where we'll work from. That's how we can get to a conclusion other than this is God. It's completely arbitrary, completely illogical, which is what the world tries to say is on their side. They say logic is on their side, but they just start, oh, there is no God. Well, if we start with there is no God, then we can get around a lot of this stuff. As it continues on, it says, So they again called the man who was blind and said to him, Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner. So now that they have a preconceived notion that he is not the Christ, now they can say, We know he is a sinner. They just get to assume facts. There's no evidence of that, but earlier they couldn't even agree to it, but now they're just assuming it to be true because that's what's necessary for them to hold on to what they're trying to hold on to, because it doesn't make sense for them to do that. It's the same thing we see with Daniel, Prophet Daniel, when they discuss how old that book was. All the scholars say, well, obviously that book was written in 2nd century, not 6th century like it's claimed, because Daniel chapter 11 is so precise, is so accurate, that it must be. Because if we assume there is no God, then there's no way anybody could have known that, and so it must be written after the fact. It's a completely arbitrary argument that starts with the assumption that there is no God, and then we get to start assuming facts because that's the only thing that makes sense. But it doesn't hold up. It's not how logic works. Belief in God is obvious. It's simple. As they continue on, in verse 25, he answered and said, Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. Then they said to him again, What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? The more convoluted, the more the argument goes down the rabbit hole of, okay, well, he's not the Christ, now he's a sinner. There's a simple solution to see through all of that. The man returns to the fact. He says, One thing I know. I was blind. Now I see. They can't escape that. No matter what they do, no matter how the Pharisees try to manipulate this event, they can't escape the fact that this man was blind, and now he can see. They even start looking. Tell us the story again. Maybe we can find something. They're grasping at straws here. Maybe we can find something that you said different this time. Maybe we missed something, some way that this actually worked. But the blind man sees through it. He says, Look, I was blind, now I see. There's nothing more to it. You can't add anything to it because it's too simple to see that Jesus was God. Following that, in verse 28 it says, They reviled him and said, You are his disciple, but we are Moses' disciple. We know that God spoke to Moses. As for this fellow, we do not know where he is from. So now they move on to their false authority. We have Moses. doesn't matter that you have God. It doesn't matter that. Whoever this man is. We have Moses. And guess what? Moses got what he had from God. Which is where the same man got what he had. It's no different. It's much like the world does. Well, you can have your belief in God. We have science. That's how we really know the world works. Guess where all the science came from? God made this world. Everything that they're studying is what came from God. This claim that science then is our answer doesn't hold up any water any more than Moses holds up. Back in chapter 5 of John, verse 46, Jesus was speaking when he said, "For if you believed Moses, you would believe me, for he wrote about me." That doesn't even, their claim to Moses doesn't even hold any water because Moses supports this man. So they can't use Moses to reject him. They have no answer to this event of this blind man now seeing. Just like the world has no answer to there not being a God. And we see the conclusion of the blind man starting here in verse 30 of John 9. It says, "The man answered and said to them, 'Why, this is a marvelous thing that you do not know where he is from, yet he has opened my eyes. Now we know that God does not hear sinners, but if anyone is a worshiper of God and does his will, he hears him. Since the world began, it has been unheard of that anyone opened the eyes of one who was born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing.'" This man who's been blind his whole life, speaking to the Pharisees who have been trained from childhood to be the rulers of the Jewish nation, to study the Bible, to be experts, are powerless against this man in his very simple, straightforward observation. There is no escape from it. "I was blind, now I see." This man could only do that if he was from God. This man is from God. All the Pharisees are left with there in verse 34 then, as they answered and said, "You were completely born in sins, and you are teaching us," and they cast him out. For no reason at all, which we already saw, he wasn't completely born in sins. So there's another false assumption they're making. But now you can't speak to us. Who cares if he was a sinner? The sinner reads from the Bible. What the sinner is saying is true. Their argument is simply, "We don't want to listen to you because we don't want to listen to you because we don't like what you have to say, so we don't want to listen to you." That is what the Pharisees are reduced to. That is what the world is reduced to when they try to argue against God. The existence of God is not the only way the world attacks Christianity. Because once they can weaken that core foundation, they can also cripple it by reducing its influence. Society today uses Christianity as such an arbitrary label, as such a, "Oh, well, you can be Christian if you want. As long as you act, you know, this is how good people act. This is how you should behave in society. And you can be Christian if you want as well. It doesn't matter how you do or what you do. We weaken the impact of it." I was deployed with a pilot, with a co-pilot, who we had had many discussions in the cockpit, because that's what we do for 12 hours of nothingness, is talk, because we can't have electronics either. And we've talked about many things, and this co-pilot would come down as far left on most things. Very, very progressive, very tolerant would be some of the buzzwords that would be used. And one day our navigator asked, "So would you consider yourself religious?" And the co-pilot said, "Yes." He goes, well, what religion then?" The navigator was a heavy Catholic. And she cocked her head and goes, "Christian." I was so stunned. Oh, this person would say they're a Christian. Nothing that they had said was ever out of the Bible. We'd had previous discussions about killing, and it was all killing wrong, and we had all kinds of discussions like that. And at one point I said, "Well, what about when God tells people to stone people in the Old Testament?" And the co-pilot would be like, "Oh, no. Bible doesn't say that. God wouldn't tell people to kill people." So in Deuteronomy, it doesn't tell people to... No, God would not say that. This person has no clue what the Bible says. They've never read it, but they're Christian. Just because they're Christian. If we weaken the core belief of Christianity, that there is a God, then we can make God whoever we want to be, and we can make Christianity whatever we want to be, and we can weaken its influence on us. Don't let that seep into you. Let Christianity influence you. Looking after the blind man is kicked up, is excommunicated by the Pharisees, pick up in verse 35 to see how this impacts his life. It says, Jesus heard that they had cast him out, and when he had found him, he said to him, do you believe in the Son of God? He answered and said, who is he, Lord, that I may believe in him? And Jesus said to him, you have both seen him, and it is he who is talking to you. Then he said, Lord, I believe. And he worshiped him. From that belief, this man took it, believed it, and worshiped God because of it. Paul wrote in Romans 10:10, he says, for with the heart one believes unto righteousness. Let that belief impact your life. Believe unto righteousness. In Romans 12 and verse 2, it says, and do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Transformed there, the Greek word, is the same word that where the term metamorphosis comes from. You know the thing a caterpillar does when it turns into a butterfly? That's what we're talking about. Transforming. Changing your life. Letting that impact you. You don't just get to say, I'm Christian, and go on. Don't conform, be transformed. You know, the world understands this too. No one thinks this of any other thing. 6 months ago, I didn't just start saying I'm a father and life go on unchanged. That's transformative. Life is different. That's what it means to be a father. It means your life has changed. It didn't surprise me either. It shouldn't have. You should know that having a helpless thing who can't do anything for itself. And Terry's told me I have to stop calling it, I have to stop calling her a thing at some point, but she doesn't understand yet, so it's okay. This helpless thing that does nothing is going to change what you do in your life. That transforms you. There's no way around it. There's no way around being transformed by the Word of God, by your belief in God. If there's anybody here tonight, or today, tonight, maybe here today, who has not been transformed. Be transformed by the renewing of your mind. If anybody who has been, but struggles, anyone has need, come while we sing.